quite simple, really. Great stories with a good cup of tea. It's the Tea with Mike Show.
Welcome to another episode of the Tea with Mike Show. Joining me for this one was Rashad. Topics of conversation included leadership and podcasting. So grab a cup of tea, sit back, and enjoy. All right, guys, welcome to 2021 and welcome to a brand new season of the Tea with Mike Show. I'm ready to crank back into gear and share some more amazing stories from the around the world, starting actually pretty local to where I'm residing right now, just up the road in Edmonton, Alberta. Following this guy's journey over the past year, and I thought it'd be a great time to start the year by hearing his story. So welcome to the Tea with Mike Show, Rashad.
Oh, Mike, thanks for having me. Really excited to be here with you.
No problem. Let's start really easy because we're still feeling the effects of Christmas. Do you want to start by telling everyone where you grew up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in my bio, and I saw on Instagram you had shared that, I call myself a Canamare Australian at times. And that's because I live in Canada, obviously. I've been here almost 15 years. And prior to that, I was born in the United States. So I was born in upstate New York, lived in a couple of states across America until about 7. And my mom is Australian. So when I was 7, we moved back to Australia. So I lived 15 years in Australia, almost 15 years here. So, you know, when people say, where are you from? It's kind of hard to say, but Canamare Australian sounds like a interesting term anyway. So yeah, grew up all over the place a little bit.
Also, and then off point straight away, what do you think growing up, I guess, in these different countries with different norms, values, and kind of cultures, what do you think that's taught you so far in life?
It's interesting. I mean, having lived in the States till I was 7, you know, it's from the point of view of a fairly young child. So, I mean, a lot of living in the States was pretty fun because I didn't, you know, I mean, I only really did the first grade in school. And I went to a Christian school, and so it was, you know, good, solid family values and, you know, pretty safe. And, you know, there wasn't a lot to worry about. And I mean, when you're that age, you know, your concerns are how much time do you get to play with your toys and why do I have to go to bed early? You know, so I don't remember, you know, as much about like how obviously different values were between the United States and Australia as a child. As a, you know, a grown up and a mature person, I can kind of see those values more so. But I mean, you know, we moved a lot in my life. Like growing up, we moved probably every year, I would say. Sometimes, you know, we were renting a lot. So it was like your rental was up, you had to move to a new place. We moved cities a few times, different opportunities that my parents wanted to pursue. And so, you know, I learned to, you know, kind of be flexible and you know, kind of go with the flow in a lot of cases, and you know, had to learn how to make friends in new locations a lot. You know, but I mean, being exposed to different cultures and different, you know, value systems is always beneficial, I think, anyway. So I mean, having had the opportunity of that so many times as a young person, I think it's definitely made me flexible in terms of being able to communicate with a broad range of people.
Awesome. And then so obviously when I was researching a little bit about you, one of the things in quotes that you told me was that you were wanting to help others and solve problems, and it's in your nature. And that even as a young child, so 7 or 8 years old, you would be the person that would always try and break up conflict amongst your peers and fellow school friends. So yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you kind of maybe fell into this role and why, and kind of why you thought, I need to be the person to break up this conflict, when probably it's fair to say that the average person shies away from conflict?
Yeah, I mean, just to, I don't know, I don't seek conflict out, but I mean, I definitely learned to be able to face it and deal with it. I mean, I think there's a couple of things, like I naturally have always gravitated towards teaching or kind of positions of authority in some way. Like I've, you know, been assistant instructor in martial arts. I've, you know, been a youth leader. I've been a manager. I've done a number of different things that are leadership, and it's kind of, I guess, in me to naturally gravitate towards that. I'm also the oldest of four boys. And so, you know, growing up in a house of, you know, four boys, and I mean, you know, in the example of the breaking up the conflict in the playground or in the schoolyard when I was 7 or 8 there, you know, like I had at that point one younger brother. And so, you know, it's, and I mean, you know, a little bit of a peacemaker, I guess, in some ways too. And I mean, there was two of my friends and they were both named Michael, incidentally.
Good.
I remember one fellow's name was Michael Green, and I can't quite remember the name of the other fellow, but his name was Michael. I just can't remember his last name. And, you know, we were actually all friends, but they'd had sort of a disagreement over something, and they were getting a little heated and, you know, kind of pushing and shoving a little bit. And I kind of wanted to take it upon myself and be like, hey, guys, you know, we're supposed to forgive each other and, you know, kind of get past these things. And, I don't know. It's always stuck with me about that. Like, you know, I mean, it, you know, it doesn't always work that way in life, but, you know, it's kind of, I guess, been in my nature to try and help people overcome those barriers wherever I can.
Fantastic. And then, again, referring back to your bio, you say, well, you sort of alluded to the fact that you sort of fell into leadership, like, through various different circumstances, like being the oldest of four boys. So in your perspective and experience, what kind of, how do you define the word leadership?
I really think of leadership as serving other people. You know, one of my great inspirations and, you know, people I would consider mentors in my life, although I've not met them, is John Maxwell. And, you know, John Maxwell is, you know, fairly famous in leadership circles. He's been around for a long, long time. He's written, I don't know, 60 or 70 books on leadership. You know, and one of the quotes that has always stuck with me of his is that, you know, if you're a leader and you're going for a walk and there's nobody there with you, you're just out for a nice stroll. You know, that's paraphrased, but that's the gist of the quote, right? And that's always stuck with me. So, I mean, if people won't follow you, if people won't be with you, you're really not doing anything, right? So to me, leadership and being a good leader is about putting the needs of others ahead of your own. So I very much believe in the values of servant leadership, you know, and, you know, basically helping people be more than they are. And a lot of times that means, you know, setting aside what you might want, what your own needs are, and finding ways to help others achieve more.
Fantastic. And then, so based off the kind of what you just told me and how you're defining the word leadership, have you always defined leadership in the way that you've just described, or is it something that you've kind of modified, or it's kind of evolved as you've had more leadership experience and responsibilities?
Yeah, it's definitely evolved over time. I mean, you know, the early positions that I had that I would call leadership positions as a much younger person, you know, going back, you know, 20 years or so. Well, maybe not that long, but, you know, in the vicinity, I started a business when I was 16. But, you know, so I had some influence and some kind of impact, I guess, at a young age. And when you're young, you can be mature, but there's a lot more maturing to do. You know, and I mean, part of what I guess drives my current efforts in terms of, you know, talking to people about leadership and sharing about leadership and those kind of things is like, you know, I made lots of different mistakes that, you know, you would look at. And if you were putting a list together of like, these are good things to do as a leader and these are not good things to do as a leader, you know, I did plenty of things in that not good column when I was young. And I mean, you know, we're human, we make mistakes. So I think my definition of leadership and the way I describe it may continue to evolve, but it definitely has evolved over time, just through life experience, learning from my mistakes, all those kind of things. So yes is the answer, I guess.
Nice. And then just veering off on a side path for a couple of moments. What was the first business that you started when you were 16?
My mother had a passion for horses, and we were kind of living on some, you know, small properties, a few acres here and there. And so we had the opportunity to own some horses. So I got quite interested and involved in, you know, horse care and that kind of thing. And my mom and I actually were sort of, you know, we were rescuing a few horses here and there, where we were, you know, retrieving them from kind of neglectful situations and things like that. And so we became aware of a German veterinarian that had developed a natural hoof care methodology. And I had the opportunity of learning that. And so that was my business, actually, was natural hoof care for horses. And so I did that for, you know, 5 years or so. And it was very interesting, kind of interesting time in my life, running a business and all that and learning the ins and outs of that. So that was, a lot of horse care, and then a bit of kind of teaching owners about how to take care of their horses.
Cool. Interesting. So even all the way back age 16, even a little bit of like leadership skills like starting to be developed, but in this sense, taking care of animals that needed nursing and needed help, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And teaching, you know, teaching other people about it. I've always been a fan of sharing the information I have.
So is leadership something that you always wanted to do, or are you leaning more on this kind of the side of it just kind of happened, like through different responsibilities? Like when you were maybe setting goals, like when you were young, or this is the career I wanted to do, things like that?
That's a good question. On my podcast, one of the first episodes, I kind of talked about my story and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And part of it is like, I was homeschooled as a young fella, and I had the opportunity of kind of being able to pick and choose some of the subject matter that I wanted to, you know, wanted to follow, right? So I had I decided I wanted to take this business and entrepreneurship book and learn, you know, kind of study that for a subject. And, you know, my mom was fairly entrepreneurial in nature, and we would do different ways of kind of making money for myself and my brothers, you know, whether that was just some spending money or we were actually working towards a goal of buying, you know, we actually bought my brother a violin because he wanted to learn to play the violin. And we bought a violin by making from scratch and selling 50-cent bagels.
Oh, wow.
So we, you know, did this kind of thing. So my mom was always very entrepreneurial. So she also encouraged, you know, reading in general, like fiction or not. But, you know, she also encouraged, like, you know, reading good character building books. So, you know, I was reading books by Dale Carnegie and Og Mandino and John Maxwell. Kind of in my mid-teens, I would say, as part of my learning curriculum, but also out of interest. So, you know, I guess I had an interest in it young, but becoming a manager and a leader in different places, you know, it was kind of like, it wasn't by accident, I guess. I mean, like when I was a youth leader, I joined the church there as a youth leader. Like, it wasn't a paid position, it was volunteer, but you know, I was like, I'm kind of on the upper limit of the age bracket that are typically in a youth group. So I thought that it would be kind of best for me to be in the kind of a leadership position with it. And they were on board with it, and they were happy to have me. But, you know, and then after that, it was like, you know, different jobs I've had, I've always sort of exhibited desirable behaviors that they were looking for in managers or business leaders. So in some ways, in some cases, I've been promoted to it. In other cases, I've sought it out.
Nice. And then probably a little bit of influence and credit to your mom, I guess, who's also quite, as you said, is quite entrepreneurial and that type of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. And so today's tea fact for the episode is, afternoon tea has also been referred to as low tea, often served in the drawing room. Afternoon tea, or low tea, and high tea, it refers to the table it is served at, and it has nothing to do with the time of day. And this comes from teahow.com.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
And that segues perfectly into me asking you, what type of tea are you drinking today?
Well, I've taken to drinking a bit of tea in the evening. So, you know, and especially since I was going to be on your show, Mike, I thought I better have a cup of tea with me. So this is chamomile, vanilla, and honey.
Also, and so it's quite sweet then if it's got honey in.
It's not too sweet. I don't necessarily gravitate to anything too sweet, but a little sweetness to it, and definitely strong on the chamomile flavor.
Now, do you drink tea frequently throughout the day, or is it like just in the evenings? Like, what's the deal?
More so an evening thing for me now. Usually in the morning I drink coffee and then just water through the day. When I was young, my mom loves tea, so we would drink a lot more tea. Kind of usually it's just an Earl Grey or something like that with a bit of sugar and milk.
Fantastic. And then so jumping back a little bit more into kind of the leadership side, and then this whole segue kind of into your podcast for the last kind of section, I guess. So you kind of had numerous leadership positions in different places, and I'm going to assume leading different teams of different sizes. So if you're thinking about all of these experiences, what have you learned the most about a leadership, and then maybe some skills that you've developed from past experiences?
There's been a lot, you know, like I've done a lot of retail management, where I've been, you know, in jewelry business, I've been in the cell phone business. And I worked, you know, in big box with Walmart. So, you know, they're all wildly different experiences. You know, like cell phones and technology is a fairly young business, right? Like mostly when you're involved in that kind of business, it's a lot of young people because, you know, young people naturally gravitate towards new technology, right? Whereas, you know, the middle age and older, it's not that they're not tech savvy and that there aren't people of those age brackets there. It's just typically it's a young person's business, right? And then jewelry, I managed almost exclusively women who could be my mother mostly, right? They were, you know, upper middle age, you know, most of them had kids, grown kids. And a lot of times I'm teaching and training and coaching you know, these women who could be my mom, and, you know, that's a whole different learning experience because it's a different dynamic, right? And a different, different way that you approach people like that versus people who are in technology and that. And then of course with Walmart, again, it's completely different because it's, you know, you're not dealing with high value commission driven salespeople. You're dealing with kind of a more hourly workforce. So, I mean, that in and of itself, I think, is one of the learning experiences is being exposed to so many different demographics and different groups of people. And how do you manage them? How do you teach them? How do you connect with them where they are? So that's been, you know, an incredible opportunity in my life of being able to do those different things. And that's, I think that's benefited me greatly in terms of, you know, just communicating with people in general, but also knowing how to approach and manage different situations with different groups of people. So that's been huge. I think one of the biggest lessons in any, well, not any job, but, you know, certain jobs in my career has been learning to stay true to yourself. And that sounds very cliche because lots of people talk about staying true to yourself. It's very, you know, if you scroll Instagram for any amount of time, you're very likely to come across a post that says something about, you know, stay true to you, or, you know, be yourself, or, you know, something along those lines of, you know, self-affirmation. And it is true. But like I said, it sounds very cliche, but the hard part is actually doing it, because, you know, you're struggling with what the company or your boss or other, your peers or colleagues think success looks like, and thinks this is what you have to do and be in order to be successful. And that was, you know, a struggle in kind of the early mid part of my career, where I had, you know, kind of a lot of pressure to kind of conform to a mold that, you know, a certain couple of people had in mind. And it's damaging, right? And there's a difference between, resisting change because you don't want to change, and change is bad for you because it's not true to your nature, right? Like, there is change and there is, you know, growth that every person needs to go through in order to develop as a human being. And that can be painful and uncomfortable, but the kind of change that someone wants to put you through because that's their perception of success or what this should look like, that's the kind of untruth that I'm saying. It's like, that's hard. That's not anything anybody should have to deal with, right? And so I think that's always going to be one of the biggest lessons that I've experienced as a leader and as a person, is knowing what your values are, knowing what your nature is, knowing what your personality is, you know, having an understanding of yourself and knowing, you know, that you're an introvert or you're extrovert, or you're ambiverted, or you're an INTJ or you're an ENFJ or you're a 10 or you're a 8652, like whatever these various personality profiles are, they're all good tools in helping you define who you are as a person. It's not telling you something that you don't already know, but it's actually giving you a vocabulary to be able to describe that. And when you understand who you are and what makes you operate, what makes you tick, it's easier to say, actually, no, I'm not going to do that because it's not who I am, and this is why, and this is how I can do what you're asking me, but I'm going to do it in my way. And when you go against that is when you develop stress and anxiety. And, you know, I struggled with depression for a period of time because I was trying to mold myself into something that wasn't truly who I was. So if I could tell people to do something, it would be know who you are and don't go against it.
With the emphasis being on don't go against it, because I would, like, most people have a basic understanding of, like, what makes them happy, what annoys them, what, like, types of work environments they like to work in. But it's also very hard, like in anything, to like remember this sometimes, like in the moment, or even if you, the longer you work at a place, because you get more sucked into the environment and the culture, etc., and it almost like takes away a piece of who you are, and that's in a lot of ways unavoidable, because obviously you have to make money, and the majority of people have to work for different companies versus working for themselves. So it's yeah. It's a hard balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely can be. I mean, when you're out in the real world and you're looking for a good company to work for, like, you know, it depends on what your definition of good is going to be. Like, if you're going to look for a job where you only ever have to work from 9 till 1 and everything is hunky-dory and everybody does everything brilliantly, like, it's going to be hard to find, because, you know, out in the real world, it doesn't always exist that way. And at the end of the day, if you look hard enough, you can always find something to complain about, no matter where you work. And that's not that you don't love the company, but, you know, if there's more good than bad, it's probably a good place to be. The problem, I think, arises for people is when you're working in a place that demands that you act in a fashion that is, you know, contrary to your values and beliefs. And it's not that what the company's values and beliefs are necessarily wrong, but they don't align well with you. And when they don't align well with you, there becomes friction. And that's, I think, where a lot of people end up in the stress and anxiety. And, you know, I think that it's, you know, that's just a symptom of the statistics that we hear about, where, you know, what's the percentage? It's over 50% of employees in the workforce are disengaged, you know. And so the only way to change that is to give people meaning and purpose in the workplace.
Fantastic. And then, kind of summarizing or taking everything that you kind of just talked about and more, what would you say is the hardest thing about being a leader, and why?
The hardest thing about being a leader. I think it's both the hardest thing and the greatest thing is kind of the people sometimes. I think that's probably the hardest thing, because it's the hardest nut to crack. Figuring out how to be a good leader, how to get the most out of someone, not to get the most out of them in a negative way, but like how to inspire them to be their best. Let's put it that way. And you know, how do you provide the most value and service as a leader? And that's because it's people first, but it's also the best thing about it, because when you have that moment where you've impacted someone in a positive way and you can see that they've grown and developed and you've had an influence on that, like it's one of the most rewarding things. I think, you know, I think generally it's in most human nature to want to help other people. And when you can help someone and you like it, it's a great feeling. So yeah, I think it's both the hardest thing and the most amazing thing about being a leader is the people.
Well, fantastic. And so let's change gears a little bit and dive into your podcast, which is called The Weekly Leadership Experience. So first off, let's start with, why did you decide to get into podcasting?
Well, yeah, you know, when you asked about, like, was leadership always something I wanted to get into, it has become that over the years. And, you know, I think, you know, even sort of 10 or so years ago when I got out of business school, I was wanting to find a way of getting into the management consulting space and kind of, you know, influencing people in leadership positions. So, you know, at that point, a lot of people were kind of discouraging me on that front, just because of, you know, being a fairly young person, it wasn't viewed as a young person's career at that point. So, I mean, that is untrue ultimately, but, you know, at that point, I kind of let it fizzle out and, you know, pursued other career opportunities and learned a lot and did a lot. But, you know, it's been something I've wanted to pursue seriously in the last several years. And, you know, I wanted to develop a coaching practice and, you know, basically help particularly young leaders or new leaders, you know, kind of get their feet under them and basically help them avoid some of the mistakes that I've made in my career. And it's not to say that they're going to avoid all the mistakes, but maybe I can help them along the way. So it's sort of, you know, something that I've been wanting to get into. So back in March, I was laid off for a bit at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. And I had some time on my hands, so I could either decide that I was going to do something with that time or, you know, sit on my bum and watch Netflix for a while. So I, you know, decided I would do something with it and capitalize on some of the ideas I'd been having, and podcasting had been part of what I was looking into as far as part of kind of building my platform and growing a community. So podcasting was definitely one of those things that took up a bit of time in researching and preparing for, and I decided it was worth the effort, and I was kind of excited. I like public speaking, so it seemed like a natural extension of that, and I dove in.
Nice. And did it take you a long time to come up with the name of the podcast, or was it just something that kind of like fell into place? Because I know like the Tea with Mike show, for example, sort of fell into place because I'm from England. I like tea, right? So it just kind of, it just materialized. I didn't have to think terribly hard, because a lot of good names are taken out there if you really think about it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it took some thought, and I know one of the first places you and I connected was Tea with Gary V. And when I was on Tea with Gary V, you know, he was super gracious and really fun to talk with. I hope I get to chat with him again in the future. But you know, he told me, he's like, you know, kind of pretty much he told me, like, stop thinking so hard, right? Because I was like, I'm being very thoughtful about this. He's like, great, be thoughtful by nature, not by effort, right? So, you know, I tend to overthink things. I tend to research a lot. I tend to analyze and stuff like that. So I was trying to be very clever with the name of my podcast. And I was trying to come up with, you know, all kinds of, you know, interesting analogies, or, you know, maybe I could come up with, you know, some kind of an ambigram that was like a longer saying, but it was going to be this dot da da show or whatever. And it was like, man, everything I read just says, name it something that's very clear about the subject material so people know exactly what they're getting into. And, you know, Gary V's obviously inspired me quite a bit. And his podcast is called the Gary V Audio Experience. And I was like, you know, sounds good. I won't name it the Rashad Leadership Experience. You know, and then I was like, how often is it going to come out? It's going to come out weekly. So it became the Weekly Leadership Experience, which is clear, tells you how often it comes out, tells you what it's about. And, you know, hopefully the experience part gives it some oomph and says, oh, you're going to find something interesting about this show.
Fantastic. And I started listening to a few of the episodes, and I definitely found it interesting to listen to, and I definitely kind of learned some things about leadership, because that's an area that I don't, whilst I've taken on lots of responsibility in different circumstances, it's never something that I've like studied, or I've never been a supervisor. So I took value from your listening to some of your podcast episodes from that perspective, because I don't have that experience, at least yet, or perspective, right? So that was cool.
Very good. Well, thank you for listening. I'm glad you got value out of it.
No worries. And then obviously when I was looking at your podcast in a little bit more like detail, one of the other things that struck me was sometimes you have guests on the show, and other times it's you diving in, talking about a little bit more about your experiences. So I'm curious to know, why did you choose to go down that particular format versus where you could take what we're doing here right now, where I'm always talking to someone else.
Yeah, I guess part of it is because I'm building a platform of kind of authority for myself. So I'm demonstrating, I guess, you know, my knowledge and insights on different leadership subjects. But I also want to bring on guests with different perspectives and opinions. And, you know, I mean, it's an opportunity for my community to learn something from someone, you know, with a different perspective, but it's also an opportunity for me to learn. You know, I'm as you know, having interviewed so many folks for your show, like anytime you're speaking with someone, it's an incredible opportunity to learn something from the person that you're speaking with. And even though that you're putting out that podcast or that episode to a wider audience, like for all extents and purposes, you're having a 40 minute to an hour conversation with someone one-on-one that you might not always have, you know, access to, and the opportunity to learn is huge. So, you know, it's kind of multifaceted there, but, you know, I do enjoy sharing my perspectives, but I also enjoy the opportunity of having guests on. So it sort of became the format of my show where I kind of do some of my own content and then in other episodes bring on guests to talk about different subject areas.
Fantastic. And then, so do you remember like the first time that you like did a solo show? Like how did it feel? Just like talking to, just talking without having any like another person's energy to go off.
It was tough. When I said that I thought it would be a good extension of public speaking, like I can get up and be fairly comfortable even just off the cuff, you know, talking. Like I've gone to a few Toastmasters meetings and stuff like that, and it's very impromptu conversation, right? And so it's like, hey, quick, talk about, you know, this subject, and you can jump up and you do your 60-second spiel about whatever it is. Like, why do you like banana splits? Okay, well, I don't really like banana splits, but I'll talk about it. I thought it would be kind of like that, but you know, I made my notes, and like the first I think it's the first 5 or 6 episodes that I put out were just me talking. So the first 2 or 3 were a bit of a challenge. I think I recorded and re-recorded the first 2 episodes for sure, like 3 or 4 times each, because I was just like not happy with the flow. I wasn't happy with like how I sounded. I wasn't happy with this or that. And like ultimately what I did for the first 3 or 4 episodes was I'm just sitting down in my basement. This is kind of my backdrop and stuff like that. But
which is super cool.
Over there, thank you. Over there is my couch, and my TV's over there that I play video games on and that. And so, you know, what I did was I got my wife to sit on the couch over there, kind of roughly behind the camera, and I basically talked to her for the first 3 or 4 episodes until I sort of got into the swing of it and felt the energy and the motion of being able to kind of talk to effectively no one until, you know. So yeah, it was tough at first, and then once I kind of got into the swing of it, you know, I can sit down now and record those shows without too much effort. I it's not that there's not effort, but just like it's not as hard mentally to get into the groove.
Yeah, that was definitely an intriguing answer, and definitely what I didn't think you were going to describe it in that way. So that's cool. So what's a goal that you have with your podcast this year, if you set specific goals?
I want to double my downloads per month, and I want to do that in the first half of the year. So you know, I like doubling is a fair bit. I think it's ambitious. You know, podcast growth is generally slower than other mediums, right? So it's going to take some effort. So, you know, to do that, I'm looking at, you know, a number of different things. I'm kind of leveling up some of my material as far as how people can consume the content. So on my website, there's going to be a new podcast player put in place right away. So it's going to be, you can kind of listen to my podcast across the entire website, and you'll be able to click around on my website and the podcast will continue playing the entire time.
That's smart, man.
So, you know, there's a few things like that. I'm kind of capturing reviews better. I've invested in a couple of resources that help me do these things. So reviews is important for any podcaster. So I've got this kind of review capture tool so people can leave more reviews with me and that kind of thing. And then, you know, just working on organic ways to continue spreading the word. And then just looking at some collaborative opportunities with people in the space that I'm in with leadership and kind of personal growth. So
nice, man. Some good solid goals. So good luck with that. And I guess as we come to the end of this particular episode, so what is one piece of advice you would give anyone kind of like looking to get into leadership based off what you've experienced in different roles?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people, the first thing that springs to mind is I think that a lot of people, they want to wait till the time is right. Well, if you're waiting for the right skills and the right opportunity and the right knowledge and the right, you know, circumstances to evolve, like, you might as well wait for a tornado to go through a wrecking yard and assemble a Boeing 747 for you. It's never going to happen. So the best thing to do is, if you're interested in leadership, is to begin to dive in and look for those opportunities where you can begin to test your skill and your knowledge and your ability as a leader. But if you're going to wait for the right time or circumstance, you'll be waiting a long time.
Nice. And that's probably a piece of advice that you could apply to pretty much any walk of life, whether it's leadership, whether it's podcasting, I don't know, whether it's learning a new hobby, career changes. You just gotta take that leap of faith, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or you'll still kind of be waiting like 3 years, and you'll be still saying the same thing.
That's right, absolutely.
Awesome, man. And then before we close out the episode, I'll flip the script and I'll give you an opportunity to ask me a question of your choosing.
Just one question? Oh, man. Yeah, you know what, Mike? I'd like to ask you what your most favorite part of doing what you do is. What is your most favorite thing?
I think it's pretty easy, actually. So I think it actually goes back to something that you said like earlier in the episode. Like, every time I talk to someone new is a chance to build a new relationship, learn something new in an area, in a lot of times in an area that I don't know much about. So, for example, like today, you've shared your a little bit of your story on leadership and that type of thing. So I've definitely learned some things, and every time it's just different learning experiences, which is helping me learn about broadening my horizons to, I guess, all the different things that go on in the world. Like, I've had people on the show that love gardening, and we've talked about leadership, we've talked about tea on the show, we've talked about marketing, we talked about social media, we've talked about fire reading, we've talked about the theater world, we've talked about movies, we've talked, and I think it's just cool to soak in new information, and then also at the same time kind of honing my skills, interviewing people, and also just having fun and drinking like a bunch of tea. So there's definitely a lot. Now that I've become more comfortable with like interviewing people with different interviews, like styles and stuff,
now it's just kind of a bunch of fun.
So oh, awesome. Really cool.
Yeah. Well, all that's left, at least today, is to say thank you for being on the Tea with Mike show and sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me. It's been a real good time.
Awesome. All right, guys, this was another episode of the Tea with Mike show with Rashad talking about leadership. I do hope you're either listening to this podcast or watching this on teawithmike.com. So one last time, Rashad, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And if you're watching this and you've still got some time on your hands, go watch some other episodes from the Tea with Mike show on my website, or even check out my social media, and you'll be able to see some of the work Rashad is doing. I'll leave his social media links below this video. It's the Tea with Mike show.